Welcome back. This is Dr. Todd White, Blue Valley Schools, welcoming you to our second episode in our podcast. If you were not able to listen to our first episode, I invite you to go back there. We talked to Brad Mosier, Director of Blended Learning for the Blue Valley Schools, and we talked about all of the impact study, the power-up procedures, as well as the one-to-learner deployment that we are currently undertaking in the Blue Valley Schools. And today, in Episode 2, I'm very excited to have Diana Tate, principal of Aubrey Bend Middle School, here. And we're going to talk about really kind of where all of this happens in our classrooms and in our schools. So welcome, Diana.
Thanks.
Yeah.
I love being here.
Yeah,
thanks.
Glad to have you here. So tell us a little bit about what blended learning means from a school perspective. We heard from Brad about what it means on the district perspective, mm-hmm. but what does it mean here at Aubrey Bend Middle School?
Well, I think one of the things that we have tried to keep our focus on as we've looked at blended learning from an overall perspective in the district is taking a look at what happens in the classroom.
Right.
And as blended, as it infers, you know, it's exactly what it means. It's a blending of some of that face-to-face learning as well as maybe some of that online, digital, virtual type thing where we're bringing in other sources. And so our focus has been less maybe on how to use a computer, because
right.
the kids already know how to do
right.
that,
yeah.
And more on what does instruction look like,
right.
and what does it need to look like for learners today? Because the learners of 2019 look a little different than the learners in my era when
right.
I was going to school. And so it's really about kind of meeting the kids where they are.
Right.
You know, back in the day, the teacher had all the information. You know,
mm-hmm.
they brought the information, presented it to the kids.
Right.
They'd done a lot of the research.
Sage
themselves.
On the stage,
yeah.
right? Yeah.
And now, kids have all that information at their fingertips.
Right.
They really don't need me to bring that to them as the
mm-hmm.
teacher. And so our focus really has been taking a look at our current classroom model to say, how do I help kids learn to use information?
Right.
And some of that is accessing technology, because
right.
that's where a lot of that information lives now.
Sure, sure.
Even our textbooks kind of live there
right.
now.
Right.
But also figuring out, what do I do with this?
Mm-hmm.
How do I use this knowledge? And why do I need to use this knowledge? You know, it's the age-old question of, why do I have to learn this?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And some of it, I think, is hard for us adults to reconcile. I don't have to make you memorize some of this stuff, because you can look it up.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
Google is good.
Yeah.
You know, they know what they're talking about.
Exactly.
But when I get into that Google, what happens? How do I vet
right.
really accurate information or sources? And then how do I manipulate that information to use it for the purpose of a math classroom, a social studies classroom, a pre-engineering classroom?
Right. Right.
A choir classroom,
yeah.
you know, it's really kind of across the board. So we're trying to blend kind of that old world, new world,
yep.
and make sure that we don't lose the piece, that human piece of learning
yeah.
of I'm still the teacher here to build relationships with my kids.
That's awesome. You know, I think there's a couple of things that our listeners really need to kind of pull out of this work that we're doing. And one is as you described, our focus on learning is not diminished at all. Matter of fact, there's even it's enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of doubling down on the fact mm-hmm. that this is about learning. It's not about a device.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about, you know, the technology, if you will. And the other, which I so appreciate, is the fact that we know in this kind of virtual world that we can kind of get lost in from time to time as we go about our daily business, is that we're also doubling down on the human connection, because
mm-hmm.
we know that that is the blend,
mm-hmm.
right? We never want to, I think, have an experience for our kids to come to any of our middle schools or for our high schools, for that matter, and have an experience that doesn't involve human connection,
mm-hmm.
because that's what makes us go. And so I really appreciate that, and I think our listeners would hopefully appreciate the fact that we've gone into this understanding that those two elements, learning and still that connection to teacher and relationships, is critically important.
I really appreciate you saying that, too, because I think the way we build relationships with kids changes a little bit as the times change too.
Right.
You know, we've got to kind of meet them where they are.
Right.
And so exactly. I've got to learn about their world where they live, and they live on their technology devices in some cases, in their video games and those types of things. If you would have asked me a couple weeks ago or months ago if I was going to know a lot about Fortnite, I probably would have said no. But I have to.
So you're the Fortnite expert,
right? No way. But I'm learning more from the kids about what makes that so compelling for them to want to play it. What are the connections they're using? And a lot of articles that you're reading these days in education are talking about learning and gaming,
right?
Coding and gaming, and what does that look like? And I think that piece of it can't be lost in building relationships with kids, because they're seeing those as their online friends. Mm-hmm. We're opening the conversation as far as what does that look like,
right?
You know, I'm going to go back to 20 years ago when we were talking about getting online on the internet to begin with, and who do you trust?
Yes.
We still have to have those conversations.
Yeah.
And we still have to make sure that kids are able to figure out, this is a safe place for me to be, this is not a safe place for me to be. And we can only do that by continuing to have those conversations around safety and learning and online and everything.
So you brought up another element that I wanted our listeners to know about, is that as we've gone into this, we've really thought very critically, because we've been at this for a while in terms of taking a look at the impact study and that sort of thing. But how do we keep our students safe, right? Mm-hmm. And so, again, from a building perspective, from a principal, what would you tell parents regarding the issuance of a technology device and the safety that that it has?
I would say that's been the number one question I've gotten from parents,
right.
You know, that I've fielded in all kinds of forums, whether it's at a PTO meeting or in a phone call. And I think the answer is twofold. Number one, our district has done a phenomenal job in finding this filter that is going to keep kids safe here at school and on their device, no matter where they take it.
Right.
I firmly believe, however, that there's no filter better than a parent or guardian or a teacher monitoring what kids are doing on devices.
It's human connection again,
I mean, especially kids in middle school.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about where they are developmentally, you've got just a huge continuum of maybe really mature to not very mature. And parents and guardians know their kids the best.
Right.
And the more they can have a conversation and just keep track of what they're doing online.
Right.
You know, just walking by the computer when they're on at home. And I happened to walk into a classroom one time when a kiddo's filter box popped up that said, oops, you can't go to this place. And I happened to stop and say, what does that mean? Oh, I just hit this and I can't go to this place. I've got to find another way to find the information. He didn't care why he got blocked by that, but he knew that it probably was going to be a site that maybe would lead him someplace else, or maybe had a pop-up ad. Our kids are not freaked out by getting that pop-up box. They just know that, hey, that's not the place I need to go. But I think that that conversation, that the monitoring of that, you know, just having your eyes and opening a discussion, asking questions, teachers and parents and guardians, you know, about what are you learning? What is this? How do you submit this assignment online, and why does that make it more efficient? You know, I think that is the best filter we could ever have.
I would agree. You know, we talk a lot about the educational triangle, right? We have the student, we have the school, and we have the parent. And we haven't lost that as a desired state. In this, is that we absolutely want parents to know and understand what their students are doing. And again, it's not about the technology, it's about the learning. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this gives kind of a new opportunity for parents to kind of engage again, mm-hmm. If you will, if they haven't, or, you know, follow our kids on this journey of understanding learning from a perspective of utilizing the technology tool that we have. You know, you mentioned that parents monitoring. And I want to tell our listeners that we're continuing to look as a district for analytic tools. You know, I have an iPhone now that weekly gives me my screen time report, right? And so we're looking for those types of tools where parents can actually see the amount of time and the sites that have been visited and those sorts of things. Again, to kind of increase awareness, to let them know that certainly there is a level of safety that we absolutely adhere to and feel very comfortable with, but also that we're sharing information and knowledge that hopefully can spawn that dinner time or, you know, in the car, going to the ball field, those types of discussions that are going on. So in these podcasts, I always ask three questions, and you'll be familiar with these questions because they're the same three questions I ask of everyone when I came to the district a few years ago. So the first one is, you know, we are doing certain things relative to blended learning, to learning itself, professional development for our staff and those sorts of things. What in that arena of learning, professional development, and the One to Learner initiative, what are the things that we need to continue doing?
Well, I feel like everybody in a school has to be a learner. You know, I learn things every single day. I try to be the teacher of teachers as the principal and the leader of this school. And our professional development, I think this year, in those opportunities, in those little chunks of time that we have, we've spent a lot of time trying to help each other learn tools that will accelerate learning. Awesome. You know, learn tools that will impact the teaching and learning that's going on in the classroom. You know, we talk about the rigor and relevance framework, which is kind of a buzzword for us educators, but how do we make learning rigorous for kids, but meet them at the level that they need to be and individualize that? How do we make it relevant so that we can answer the question, why do I have to learn this?
Exactly.
And I feel like during professional learning, I've tried to model that for our teachers. We did an activity last week before the kids came back where we were talking about, okay, kids have devices. We're in a pretty sweet spot at Aubrey Bend because we've had devices for a year. We got to be the pilot, and I thank you for that. That was super cool. But and in the beginning, they were bright and shiny and fun. But really, then they became just another school supply. You know, it's just, you call it a big chief notebook, call it a Chromebook, whatever you want to call it. But it's just another piece of school supply that we have. And what we tried to do during professional learning was to get teachers to see, how am I using that as an accelerator for learning? And so they have to learn the programs, you know? How many times did I write a lesson plan in my classroom where I took the test to see if it was, like, doable, right? So we have to do the same thing for kids. You know, we ask them to make a PowerPoint because I know how to make a PowerPoint. But what if they could show their learning in different ways?
Absolutely.
What if they could do a podcast? What if they could do a video, you know? And now we've got these tools that are at their fingertips that they could use.
That's awesome.
And so we taught the teachers how to – actually, they taught each other, which was even cooler how to use this. And the teachers who were teaching some of those courses on our Power Up team were saying things like, this is how I'd use it in a math class. This is how I might use this tool in a reading class or in a choir class or in, you know, the art room. And the kind of conversation that went on those days was so energizing because they were saying, I could do this on Monday when the kids get here. I could do this in this next unit. And our whole point was, are we giving kids the voice and choice in that arena too? And if we know what those tools are, we can say, I don't care how you show me how you learned this. You get creative.
Show me.
Then that really pumps the kids up too.
So So the second question
I want to keep doing that.
I know. Yeah, the second question is, we're doing things, but what are some things that we should start doing as a part of this?
You know, I think part of this, we try so hard to communicate online, digitally with our families, et cetera. I think one of the things I want to start doing is to get more FaceTime with my parents to talk about some of this.
Yeah.
That it's really hard to do because mm-hmm. everybody's so busy. And I've been talking about this for 2 or 3 years, but I feel like things like this podcast, this is one way of reaching out to right. our community. How do I blend my learning with my parents too?
Oh, that's a great
You know,
question.
How do I start doing things that will appeal to them, that will give them the tools to maybe ask the right questions? Maybe they just don't know what to ask about a Chromebook or, mm-hmm. you know, how was your day? From a middle school kid, you're going to get fine. Did you learn anything? No.
Yeah.
You know, what'd you do at school? Nothing. Maybe. Those are all very typical answers,
sure.
but there's a whole lot that goes on here. And so some of that is blending that for parents, but also providing some more transparency
mm-hmm.
so they can see
yeah.
what's going on.
They can experience it too, right?
Yeah.
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 I
mean,
awesome.
Somebody suggested I wear a GoPro camera all day
oh,
and then
no.
do that. I'm not sure I'm ready to do that.
yeah.
That would give them a glimpse into yeah. into the life of Aubrey Benn.
Well, the last question is often one we don't think about a lot, but is the toughest one, but I think also one of the more important ones. And that is there's only a certain amount of time and resource that we have. So what should we stop doing?
That is the $1 million question.
Yeah.
Because really there's is. Always somebody connected mm-hmm. to something we're doing that who likes it.
Right.
Who wants it that way.
Yeah.
I you know, we even saw that with our Power Up this week. You go into Parent View and you sign digitally your agreement. Mm-hmm. Can you just give me a paper copy? Because that would be easier. You know what I mean? I feel like that sometimes too. But I think the stop doing will always be the hardest.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things, if I'm thinking about teaching and learning.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think the stop is, let's stop giving kids information in ways where they can already access it. Let's stop lecturing. Do kids need to learn how to write notes or take notes? Yep, they do.
Sure.
But what's more important is, what do you do with the notes after you take them?
Right.
Because I can download all kinds of information about a topic from Google.
Mm-hmm.
But what do I do with that? Had I had some of the tools our kids have in college, I think about the ways that I could have manipulated mm-hmm. the information to help me learn better and faster and deeper.
Yeah.
And so I think that's, we've got to stop some of those archaic practices of, I teach, you learn.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You regurgitate and I give you a grade. I think we need to stop doing that to make way and time for those other ways that kids are going to learn. That blended piece where, hey, I don't care how you show me how you know how to add and subtract fractions. Show me how you can do it, meet my objective, and then let's move on.
That's
I think
great.
That would revolutionize learning.
Awesome. Well, thank you. This has been awesome.
Sure,
and we
thank
greatly
you.
Appreciate that and such insight. I think that our listeners are going to very much appreciate your insight and your commitment to, again, two things: learning. Even in this technological world, we're concentrating on the learning, as mm-hmm. you've just so eloquently stated, and the human condition. Let's continue to build relationships with all of our kids. So thanks, Dan. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. And we also want to thank our listeners for following us on our podcast. And make sure that you continue to follow us, because our next conversation will be on mental health. As you know, Blue Valley has spent a good deal of time and effort taking a look at mental health and teen suicide. And we want to continue that conversation with you to let you know what not only we're doing in Blue Valley, but also our community as well. So look forward to that. Reverend Adam Hamilton of the Church of the Resurrection will be one of our guests. We're also looking at future guests as well to have a well-rounded podcast again on mental health. Thanks very much for listening, and we will see you soon.